So it was parents' weekend here at Carroll along with homecoming. Any parents still here? Got a couple holdouts. I said this gospel this morning at the Mass for the parents was really appropriate for parents' weekend. And it's not because Jesus sat down with the little child at the end and said how great little kids are, right? It's because this is where parents get to understand that Jesus knows exactly what it's like to be a parent. How so? Well, Jesus stops everything with his family, the 12 spiritual children, and he explains very clearly things of great importance. He stops everything and he's like, okay, I'm going to tell you something. And so he does. And then he even has like the follow-up clarifying conversations. Do you understand? And then they move on, and his spiritual children, the 12, demonstrate that they have absorbed precisely nothing of what Jesus has been trying to impart to them. And every parent understands that. You who will be parents one day, you will understand that. What's going on? Well, the gospel tells us something today, but let's go back to last week. Jesus says things of great import that his apostles just don't understand. Last week, he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer greatly, be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and rise after 3 days. He spoke this openly. He lays it right out for the apostles. Of course, Peter jumps in and says, God forbid that ever happened to you. And Jesus, and here we get a great detail from the Gospel of Mark that we don't get in either Matthew or Luke. When Peter interjects and says, God forbid that ever happened to you, Mark says that Jesus looks back to the rest of the disciples. And then he turns to Peter and says, get behind me, Satan. You're thinking not as God does, but as human beings do. See, it's for the sake of the disciples that Jesus has to lay the hammer down on Peter to get his attention and to tell him he is on the wrong path. And so then he calls them together and he goes on, whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. Lesson learned, right? No problem. They've got it. All right, so they go along the way. And Jesus, once again, has a lesson for them. And he says from today's gospel, the Son of Man is to be handed over to men, and they will kill him. And 3 days after his death, the Son of Man will rise. Slightly important. No questions. So they go on their journey. And of course, we know what happens. The apostles who have absolutely interiorized these lessons about the self-sacrificial love of Jesus, about what it really means to follow him, about denying themselves, they are arguing along the way about who among them is the greatest. I mean, think about that for just a second. Like, what does that even look like? Because in my mind, this is what it looks like. They're on the path, and Jesus is walking ahead of them just like this. Hearing all of this, can you imagine what that argument must have been like? Peter's like, I'm the best. I'm the greatest. He told me I'm the rock upon which he'll build his church. Meanwhile, Andrew's like, dude, he just called you Satan. Right? I mean, How off is it? Who's the greatest, right? But thank God we have that reality expressed in the Gospels. Because just like the apostles, so too like us. The deep truths of the gospel are hard to get for us, mostly because they're so counterintuitive. And also because of this, my friends, we're all sinners, just like the apostles. We're all very wounded by sin. We're all touched and warped and deformed by original sin. And that touches every part of our being. Now, it doesn't corrupt us entirely. Luther was wrong. But it does affect us, and profoundly so. St. Augustine will pick this up. Fourth century, St. Augustine, the doctor of grace is what he's called, great saint, doctor of the church. And he said, the sinful soul is curvatus in se, curved in on itself, curved in on itself. That is what sin does. Original sin has this tendency in us to make everything about ourselves, to curve everything in on ourselves. Our own sins, every single one of them, the big ones and the small ones, are all a turning inward on self, placing ourselves above what a situation might require, what another person might require, what God might ask of us. That is what sin is. And all of us are affected by that. And it hits hard. Look at what it does to the apostles. They're not just having a discussion along the way behind Jesus. They are arguing. They're having a fight about who is the greatest. The first generation of Christians after the apostles, the early church fathers, they had a great phrase that they used often, ubi divisio, ibi peccatum. Where there is division, there is sin. Where there is division, there is sin. Do you see how this pride, this ego, this exaltation of self brings division precisely because it's not in accord with what God wants, precisely because it's sinful. And so they fight among themselves. But also this, not only do they lack unity as they should have, but they miss the most important message that Jesus is trying to impart, namely the necessity of his passion and his death and his resurrection. It's what Christianity is all about. But a soul wrapped up in itself, curved in on itself, cannot get that message, cannot receive that message, because the saving mystery of Jesus' passion and death and resurrection is one of love, self-sacrificing love. And it looks like this. It looks like that. And a soul curved in can't accept that. Once again, it's not just the apostles who struggle with this. It's every single one of us. Great lines from St. James in the second reading. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every foul practice. Where do the wars and where do the conflicts among you come from? Is it not from your passions that make war within your members? You see, that division doesn't just happen on this scale in terms of the church or in terms of other people. It happens in here, doesn't it? Our passions get inflamed by sin, and then they make war on our other desires, our deeper desires, our desires for holiness, our desires for sacrifice, our desires to seek and grant mercy. How many groups have been crippled by jealousy? How many friend sets have been crippled by jealousy? How many great endeavors at Carol have been sunk by jealousy because someone thinks they deserve credit for it or are threatened by someone else with a good idea? It happens all the time, not just here. How many corporations, right? It's all around us. And that just shows the seriousness of the reality of being curved in on oneself. How much pain happens because we get hooked on one thing and we can't let it go and our life becomes wrapped around it. Whether it's a sin, whether it's a wound, whether it's something in our life that we wish was different because someone else has this. That touches all of us, man. But here's the solution. The solution is the way that Jesus opens up, the way that he creates. And it starts with a basic truth that needs to be spoken and needs to be heard. Your life is not about you. Your life is not about you. In fact, everyone should write, "My life is not about me," and put it on the mirror. And you see it every morning when you wake up and you say, "My life is not about me today. It's not about me." I know that sounds counterintuitive, especially to you all, because in college, so much seems about your life and your future. But listen, if you walk that path, you will find nothing but unhappiness and discontentment, because your life is not about you. What then, might you ask, is it about? Well, it's about him. Your life is about him. And then your life is about his will, which leads you to his people, wherever they may be found, especially those on the margins, those hidden, as Mother Teresa says, in the distressing disguise of the poor. When you make your life about him and about his people, you begin to open up. You know, what do we pray? Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. Right? Great words. Great words. They made it into a pretty familiar prayer from what I've heard. Do we take them serious, though? Do we really live as if thy kingdom is the priority, as if thy will is the first thing my heart should be focused on? And of course, the answer is no, we don't. You don't, I don't. But once we recognize that truth, then we can actually get some work done. Because if we ask Jesus, he will begin to open us up. And instead of being curved in on ourselves and our small plans and our small desires, he, through his grace, will begin to open us and open us and open us and open us and open us wide until our hearts look like this. And if our hearts look like this, then our hearts will begin to look like his. And then his kingdom will come into the world precisely through us. Brothers and sisters, that's why we're here tonight. We're not here to have a good time. We're not here to feel better about ourselves. We're here to be transformed by grace, to be opened up so that the Lord can have access to our hearts. And then if he has access to our hearts, his will can be accomplished first here and then necessarily out there. That's how it works, fellas and ladies. That's how it has to work. It's never worked any other way. It's also why this chapel is built the way it is. Without cost, you have received. Without cost, you are to give. You know that's intentionally placed. That second part is the key to your joy, friends. Give without cost. Make your life a gift. It's not about you. It's a gift to be given away. You are a gift to be given away. And in that, as counterintuitive as that is, you'll find yourself. You'll find your joy. It's not just a theory. It has concrete form, and that's why as you leave the chapel, you see the corporal works of mercy and the spiritual works of mercy, because there's a very real way to live your life as a gift. Clothe the naked. Feed the hungry. Shelter the homeless. Take care of those in need, spiritual needs. Visit the lonely. Pray for those who have hurt you. Grant mercy to those who have offended you. Those ways, friends, those are real. They always involve real people, the corporal works and the spiritual works. And everyone has an opportunity to live that way. So tonight, we've come to the Lord to be opened up wide, so that His kingdom can come and His will might be done. If that happens in us and through us, how joyful we will be.